Big thanks to Aaron Portsline for joining us. Talked about the Columbus Blue Jackets. In case you missed any of the interview or any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. It's available in Google Play as well. Just subscribe to the show using your Apple and or Android device and get it sent to you each and every week. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Looking for a great place to get a bite to eat on this beautiful Saturday morning. Maybe you're looking out to get a brunch and maybe have a mimosa or two, as I know Ezzy will be doing after the show. You know, check them out, Bernstein's Deli, that's in the Cordon Village Mall.
I could really go for an icy sandwich right now because you guys are hoarding all of the Timbits. I think I've got one.
They're right beside you.
I haven't had one Timbit.
Well, we have to leave Rory at least five.
Yeah,
well,
Rory is the
Hoover. He does make his demands. He makes his, you know, he's the Hoover of Timbits, as you will.
Yeah, we're not talking about Tim Co-op Hoover either.
That's quite the name drop.
The TSN insiders came back with an insider trading yesterday live from Nashville on top of Tootsie's, the famous bar in Nashville. It's the first time we've had an insider trading, I believe, since the NHL trade deadline has come and gone. They also released a trade bait board. Here's what the TSN hockey insiders had to say about the insider trading.
Very exciting. First ever insider trading. From a bar rooftop patio, and it doesn't get much better than Tootsie's in Nashville. There's Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie. It was a huge season for the Edmonton Oilers. It's an even bigger offseason as they try to sign up their two stars, McDavid and Draisaitl, to long-term deals. Might those be simultaneous signings?
They absolutely could. Ongoing discussions there. I wouldn't say that there are hard negotiations with either Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl. The initial belief was that they'd do it in a pecking order, that McDavid would get done first, followed by Draisaitl. Now, there's a sense that maybe they get done together. Is it an eight-year term for both? Could it be five just because of the enormous money involved? My sense is, though, that the Oilers would like to roll them both out at the same time later in the summer.
You can see the logic, especially from Connor McDavid's perspective, as to why both deals would need to be done at the same time. Connor McDavid, I'm sure he's prepared to take a hometown discount, as Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, a lot of great players have, to ensure that you're able to build a team around you, even though you're taking a big chunk of the percentage of the cap. But if you take a hometown discount and then the guy coming in the door next doesn't take as big a hometown discount, well, then you just gave some money to him. So it's one of those sensitive negotiations where you've got to kind of know the lay of the land, not just for yourself, but the other top players on the team.
That's priority number one for Edmonton. But while they try to work out those deals, is there another deal of a different kind potentially for Jordan Eberle?
Yes, I'm told that there are offers on the table for Jordan Eberle. Nothing that Peter Chiarelli, the general manager of the Oilers, is willing to accept just yet. But it goes back to Draisaitl and McDavid and the finances involved, right? I mean, Jordan Eberle still has 2 years remaining on his contract at $6 million per, so it sounds like he'll definitely get traded.
Matt Duchene of the Colorado Avalanche also has a couple of years at $6 million left on his contract. I would vote him as the player most likely to be traded this summer. Obviously, the Avalanche tried to trade him at the deadline. They didn't find something to their liking. They're trying that again now. I expect they will find something. And I would suspect that also from Matt Duchene's perspective, his time in Colorado would be up. Now, you never say 100% a player will be traded for sure because they can't just give him away. But this is one where I believe both the team and the player are looking for a fresh start.
Well, and some want to link either Eberle or Duchene to the New York Islanders. The New York Islanders have to protect three defensemen. Right now, they've got four quality guys. So maybe that makes Travis Hamonic a more attractive trade piece. They want a top six forward in return. And another top quality, interesting defenseman in play, Tyson Barrie of the Colorado Avalanche. Now, the belief is for Duchene, Joe Sakic would have to get a defenseman back. That would free him up to move Tyson Barrie, and he'd need a high pick or a combination of picks and prospects to make that work.
Lots of names discussed in that insider trading. I think insider trading should happen from bars all the time now. I enjoyed the background country music being played there. I can't believe we're still talking about Matt Duchene as being on the trade block. It seems like he's been talking about that for the last three seasons. I expect he finally goes between now and or at the NHL draft specifically. Jordan Eberle is an interesting guy. I mean, still put up 51 points for the Oilers, still got 20 goals last season, playing in a much reduced role, obviously, behind McDavid and behind Dreisaitl. You know, would you have interest in Jordan Eberle still at this point with the 2 years and $12 million remaining on his contract?
I would, Drew, but, you know, you just mentioned Leon Dreisaitl. Leon Dreisaitl against Anaheim in the second round was out of his mind.
Right.
And he puts up 16 points in 13 games, and Jordan Eberle did not score a single goal in the playoffs. He had two assists in, I think it was 12 games, and he basically played his way out of Edmonton.
So you think that disappearing act is going to factor into people, to teams thinking when trading for him?
Somewhat, but you mentioned he had 51 points during the regular season. He's a guy that's put up 60 points a couple of times in his NHL career, and he's relatively young. And, you know, his cap hit is fine. Maybe he's getting overpaid a little bit. But you know, what I think is very interesting about the clip that we played of the insiders talking about Duchesne and Eberle, both similar age, right? 26 for Duchesne and 27 for Eberle. But again, Drew, when you talk about all of those teams that are starved for goals, right? So whether that's a team like the Los Angeles Kings, whether that's a team like the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, there are going to be teams that are going to be interested in Jordan Eberle, right? So to answer your question in a roundabout way, yes, I do think there is a trade market and a significant trade market for a guy like Jordan Eberle, because you think about it, guys. I mean, the amount of players that score 20-plus goals a year is limited in the NHL. You think that there's, you know, 200 guys that score 20 goals a year, but it's a lot less than you think, right? And Eberle's a guy that scored 20 goals four times in his career, and I think he can still do it. The question is, you know, the question has always been about his motivation and you know, his compete level and all of that. So I do think he will be traded. It remains to be seen where, but I believe that there are going to be more than, you know, two or three teams that give Peter Chiarelli a call. As far as Duchesne goes, I'm more excited about a guy like Matt Duchesne, because we know that the Colorado Avalanche are building their team around Nathan MacKinnon, and, you know, now they're building their team around Mikko Rantanen and Tyson Jost, who was drafted last year. Tyson Jost is probably at least another year away from the NHL, but needless to say, I think we know that the Colorado Avalanche are about to undertake a massive rebuild, and Duchesne appears to be the guy that they really want to move out. So, I mean, Montreal has been linked to Matt Duchesne, but I think there's going to be a lot of teams that want Matt Duchesne, right? This is a guy that makes the Canadian Olympic team for a reason, right? I mean, he's one of the speediest, skilled guys in the league. So for me, Dave, Duchesne is a lot more intriguing than Eberle.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I'm with Drew. I can't believe his name is still on these boards. And you think to yourself, like, at what point is this going to end? And how stressful is it for a player like Matt Duchesne? And you guys remember the draft when he was picked by Colorado and his reaction, because, you know, he was a huge Joe Sakic fan growing up. And, you know, oftentimes players are just happy to be drafted. But, you know, he was a guy who really loved the Colorado Avalanche, followed the Colorado Avalanche as a youngster. And then, you know, to get drafted by them, by a team led by Joe Sakic, meant a lot to a Matt Duchesne, and you know, for it to have gone to this point where he's now seen as an expendable piece, you know, it's got to be tough for that kind of player.
And a lot of people, you know, looked at his performance this year, Matt Duchesne, that is, and they said, you know, he had a terrible year and all that, but he had 30 goals the year before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, this Colorado Avalanche team was by far the worst team in the NHL, and their defensemen couldn't get the puck up to the forwards, right? So, I mean, everybody had a bad year on the Colorado Avalanche. Nathan MacKinnon had a bad year. I mean, go up and down the list. Jerome Iginla, obviously, before he was traded to L.A. So I really don't think too many teams are going to focus on one bad year when you consider the year before he had 30 goals.
Does Duchesne for Hamonic make a lot of sense from both sides?
Well, yeah, I mean, you heard it. Colorado wants a defenseman, right? Well, I mean, that's where they're the weakest, right? And so, sure, it could make sense if the New York Islanders do want to move on from Travis Hamonic, but certainly, I mean, when you're talking about a guy like Duchesne, the asking price is going to be high. I mean, they're not going to trade Matt Duchesne, you know, for a mediocre defenseman. They're going to want a top pairing guy in return.
Oh, certainly. I mean, yeah, that goes without saying. The top name on the TSN.ca trade bait board was not discussed in the insider trading segment we just played, but that's Sammy Vatanen of the Anaheim Ducks. We know the Ducks have a glut of defensemen. We know they have the expansion draft troubles to deal with. Sammy Vatanen's going to return get a pretty sizable return back for the Ducks if they decide that he's the guy they decide to trade.
Yeah, but Drew, can you trade him when you know that Hampus Lindholm is possibly out for 5 months, right? That's the big issue. And, you know, Cam Fowler has had some injury problems. He didn't play in the first round. You know, a guy like Kevin Bieksa is not coming back. But when you talk about the future of the Anaheim Ducks defense, I mean, Brandon Montour and Josh Manson were excellent in those three rounds in the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? So you know that someone is expendable, and Sammy Vatanen, because he's under contract for two more years as opposed to Lindholm, who's their number one defenseman under contract for four more years, it's most likely going to be Vatanen. So the reasoning behind that is because Cam Fowler is going to have to be signed to another contract after this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, a guy like Sammy Vatanen is would be perfect for Colorado, right? So a lot of teams, I think, are going to be in on Sammy Vatanen as well. But the injury problems that Vatanen and Lindholm have had, because Vatanen's out long-term too. So how do you trade a guy that's going to be out for 4 months? He might miss the start of training camp or the regular season, right?
Well, the biggest problem that the Ducks are facing is that no-move clause that Kevin Bieksa has. If he doesn't waive it, then they have to protect him. They're obligated to protect him. And that's
he could be a buyout too.
Yeah, they could buy him out. I mean, you know, that's a potential there as well.
He's actually not bad in the playoffs.
Well, but I mean,
as a third pairing guy.
Yeah, but I mean, he's 35 years old. If you're talking about guys you want to protect versus guys you don't want to protect.
Yeah, but he's playing the same role as a Ron Hainsey is on Pittsburgh.
I know, but Pittsburgh's not protecting.
No, you're right. I'm just saying. I mean, as an aside, I didn't think he was that bad in the playoffs.
No, he was tolerable, but you don't want to lose. You don't want to have to keep him and lose one of your young up and coming defensemen as a result. That would be where it's a terrible trade-off.
Right, and Shea Theodore obviously has emerged as a guy that can play a full season, you know, after being very good in the American Hockey League, just like Brandon Montour, right?
Both
so the Anaheim
guys,
Ducks.
Both of those guys are exempt, of course, from the expansion draft.
They're absolutely stacked on defense, Anaheim.
Well, and that's the problem, again, with this expansion draft is, you know, if you're too stacked, it comes back to eventually hurt you. You know, you were just talking about it briefly. Is this going to be one of the most hectic 3 weeks to a month period in NHL history?
I think it's going to be the most exciting offseason that we've seen since 2012 when you had, you know, Zach Parise and Ryan Suter signing with the Minnesota Wild, those really long contracts. And then that was also the year Justin Schultz picked Edmonton, right? So I do think it's going to be very interesting. And it's not just going to be, you know, Las Vegas and the expansion draft. It's going to be leading up into the draft. We're probably going to see more trades, you know, in the middle to end of June than we've seen in a long time.
Well, I think it can probably start any day now. I mean, with this ridiculous schedule of the Stanley Cup Finals, where apparently they have four off days in between every game, that's a perfect opportunity for teams to make a trade and not take away the focus from the Cup Final. That's really what the NHL wants. I mean, they would never come out and publicly say it, but they would love teams to fill in the gaps of these non-game days with big trades, and so that it keeps them front and center throughout the course of the entire month of June. I mean, actually, the only thing that's dumber than the NHL schedule for their finals is the NBA schedule for their finals, where they have, I believe, 2 days off between every single game except for one game, which is, I mean, completely asinine.
And Drew, we should mention it's June 17th.
2 weeks from today.
Yep.
5 o'clock.
That's when there's the trade waiver freeze.
Yeah, well, I think what happens is at 5 o'clock, you have to submit your teams to the Golden Knights. Your protected list, you have to submit it to the NHL. The Golden Knights get those lists the next day at 10 a.m.
Yep.
They have, I guess, what, their 72 hours or whatever to make their decisions, and then the formal announcements are made at the NHL Awards coming up, what's that, the 21st of June, I believe, is so that's, you know, 2 weeks from this coming Wednesday is when they formally announce who's picked and who's not picked, leading into the NHL draft a few days later.
What do you think the odds are that those get leaked in advance?
What's Julian Assange doing these days?
NHL leaks instead of WikiLeaks, that sort of thing. I would say the odds are probably pretty decent. Well, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I mean, I can't remember the last time they had an expansion draft. It's been so many years and nothing has been.
Do you think there'll be an unmasking?
Interesting.
The other thing, guys, that we should mention is June 12th at 4 o'clock Central Time is the last day teams can have players with no move clauses waive it for the expansion draft. So that's something to look out for when you're talking about Toby Enstrom.
Yeah, the calendar is crazy over the next few weeks here in the NHL. Let's go to break. We're going to come back. We'll do a short segment, then we'll come back last hour of the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, Saturday morning. Previous hour of content was brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Quick update from things in the morning skate in Nashville. Peter Laviolette was asked about the starting goaltender and any lineup changes for the Predators. He gave the standard next question as a form of an answer to those questions. That being said, Pekka Rinne was in the home team's net in the morning skate, so it clearly looks like it's going to be Pekka Rinne in net for the Nashville Predators tonight. P.A. Parenteau going to be in the lineup for the Predators as well, so he's going to come back in the Predators lineup. They acquired him at the trade deadline. So, as expected, no surprise, Pekka Rinne in net for the Predators, unless something dramatic happens between now and game time tonight. P.A. Parenteau checking into the lineup as well for the Penguins.
Yeah, Drew, a little bit surprised, and it's for Cody McLeod, right?
It's for Cody. Yeah, it doesn't say yet for sure, but it's likely for.
I thought they were going to go with Mikko Salomaki. He was actually a pretty underrated player. He's got a lot of speed, too, but P.A. Parenteau's obviously got more of an offensive upside than Cody McLeod. He's only played 3 games so far in the playoffs. He's been a healthy scratch for the majority of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So a little bit interesting, but you know that they want to get a little bit more of an offensive punch into the lineup.
One other note about the expansion draft. It's Sunday, June 18th. That's the day the league will approve and distribute the protected lists for all teams, including Vegas. Now, it doesn't say if they're going to distribute it publicly that day. I assume they are. But it doesn't officially say that, but I would expect Sunday, June 18th is the day you will find out when and who each team has protected and left exposed for Vegas. And, of course, they make the announcements coming up on Wednesday, June 21st, coinciding with the upcoming NHL awards. So it's going to be a hectic, hectic month of June in the NHL.
Get your popcorn ready, Drew.
Speaking of the draft, there's a very good article for Jets fans to read today in the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason Bell wrote it about
Lucas Sutter
and what it was like to be drafted from his family and from his, you know, from the hockey pedigree that he has, and the disappointment of not making it in the NHL or not necessarily disappointment. But it was a very interesting article from Jason Bell in the Winnipeg Free Press.
So, he, of course, was a second round pick of the Jets in 2012, the year they took Scheifele in the first round, Adam Lowry in the third round. Lucas Sutter obviously never was signed to a contract. A swing and a miss when it comes to the Jets and drafting, a rare one for the Jets. Interesting. It is a very interesting article. I read it this morning. Yep. Check that out on Illegal Curve. There's a link to it. Of course, it's behind the Free Press paywall. But we would encourage you to subscribe to your local newspaper, be it the Free Press or the Sun, because local media and local print media is a very valuable thing to have.
He was taken in the Trouba draft, though, not the Scheifele draft.
Pardon me, the Trouba draft. Yeah. I misspoke there.
Yeah, he, you know, just a little tidbit here, Drew.
Yeah, quickly.
Lucas Sutter was the son of Rich Sutter, who was the twin brother of Ron Sutter.
There you go, as part of the hockey lineage of the Sutter family, as we all know, is an extensive one up from the near the Red Deer area, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Trevor Kidd is going to join us next. He starts off hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us via Twitter at Illegal Curve. If you prefer to text, you can text us at 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, you can check out all our latest on our website, IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program, good friend of ours. You know him here on TSN 1290 as one of our analysts. Trevor Kidd joins us. Trevor, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, guys. How are things?
Doing very well, Trevor. How are you doing? How's the off season been?
It's been good. Finally, some weather here, obviously. Enjoying the heat.
Absolutely. Trevor, brought you on. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, look a little bit at the goaltending. I want to start with Pekka Rinne. You know, he was so good in the first, you know, 2 rounds, 3 rounds of the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, he was fantastic against the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. And then you get to these first 2 games of the Stanley Cup Finals, and he's been nothing short of atrocious. As a former goalie, and I mean, I don't, you know, want to pile on the guy, but he has been pretty bad. As a former goalie yourself, what's it like to go through one of these phases where you just must feel as though the puck is minuscule in size, and every save and every save opportunity is just an absolute struggle to keep the puck out of your own net. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting to watch up until the last couple of games. There was a point going back, you know, a couple of weeks ago when Marc-Andre Fleury was still playing. Now, obviously, Murray has taken over for the Penguins, but when you spoke about Conn Smythe type, you know, conversations going back a couple of weeks ago, it was Fleury and Ray. And now, obviously, with Fleury stepping out up until two games ago, I mean, Pekka Rinne was stealing the show here. And, you know, Pittsburgh's a great team. You know, and he has, you know, use the word atrocious. He hasn't been good, certainly. Pittsburgh, I will say, has a lot of talent. They don't need a lot of opportunities at net to score goals. The opportunities that they do get are usually great air, usually high quality, and they're not wasting them. When you guys, when you have a Malkin and a Crosby and the way Gensel's playing right now, and a huge support staff that is playing very well on the offensive side of the game, you don't need a whole bunch of opportunities to light the red lamp. So, but with that being said, it has to be frustrating for Pekka Rinne. Certainly there's a little bit of luck involved in playing the position and being in the right spot and making some saves. And it just seems that, you know, right now, not only he's not making the saves, but, you know, just being in the right spot, you know, a lot of times pucks just hit you from being in the right spot. And those are finding those holes. You look to the first period there, when Pittsburgh, I believe it was their first or second goal, and you're like, how did that go in? There wasn't even a space big enough for that puck to fit, and it actually got through. And that's the way, you know, the things are bouncing right now for him. So it has to be frustrating, but, you know, a reset opportunity tonight, you know, the team as a whole, and certainly Rinne is going to have to be a huge part of it. Tonight is the Stanley Cup, in my opinion, in regards to if they don't win tonight, it's over.
You know, Trevor, sticking with Pekka Rinne, there's been some speculation that, you know, Pekka Rinne might not start. Peter Laviolette hasn't announced who his starter is going to be for Game 3 tonight. But do you see any way that Peter Laviolette doesn't go back to Pekka Rinne? And when you talk about his struggles in the first game, would we at all be surprised that he comes back in Game 3 and steals a show and gets a win for Nashville?
You know, and I'm going off of the assumption, obviously, you're right, there hasn't been a starter name, but I'm just thinking, boy, this guy has carried the Melfire Hockey Club for how many years? Up until two games ago, Conn Smythe Trophy candidate. I don't know how you put the other guy in tonight, and things don't go well. To me, it's this is Pekka Rinne's team, and this is in regards to the position, the net position. To put anything other than Pekka Rinne in there makes absolutely zero sense for me, regardless of the situation. I mean, Pittsburgh obviously goes to Matt Murray in the last series, but hey, Matt Murray, I think it's a different situation. Won the Stanley Cup last year for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, you know, Mike Sullivan making that change in that, yeah, certainly raised some eyebrows, but a little bit of history there and some success that made it a little bit easier. I don't know how Laviolette can make that decision and going to, you know, a legitimate number two guy that has watched a lot of hockey. Certainly his finished career and playing in with Milwaukee, some good stats, but those are two different things than Stanley Cup final needing an absolute victory in Game 3.
Trev, how hard must it be on Marc-Andre Fleury, and he'll never say anything publicly, obviously, but how hard must it be on him to have been so integral to the Penguins' success early on, and now to have to watch from the bench?
Has to be. You know, inside for sure it must be, I don't know what the word would be, frustrating, but, you know, swallowing some pride, I guess. Wants to be in there, maybe, you know, wanted another opportunity to, you know, have the reset there against Ottawa. But, you know, an interesting and watching, you know, the first few series and listening to the reports and the conversations coming out of the locker room, that this guy is an amazing, amazing team guy. And, you know, that was probably the biggest thing that I learned even in watching about Fleury, is just how good of a person he is, how great of a teammate that he is. You know, the support role that he's played since Matt Murray, you know, comes in last year, wins the cup. They kind of split the net this year. There's trade rumors. There's this, there's that. And then the first game against Columbus, Murray tweaks his groin. Fleury goes in there, steals the show, and you see him doing different things. Cartwheels in the dressing room, big smiles on his face. So this guy looks like he just loves life, never mind hockey. So he seems to be a guy, in my opinion, from just what I've learned in the last, you know, over the course of the playoffs here, that takes everything in stride. And it is maybe, you know, maybe different than what most you know, players in that position might get in regards to feelings, frustrations, getting a little bit down. He doesn't seem to be that type of guy.
Trevor Kidd is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Trevor, of course, as a TSN 1290 hockey analyst here on the station. Trevor, moving a little bit closer to home, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff earlier this week spoke about Connor Hellebuyck and about the season that he had and the desire and or need for the Jets to get a suitable backup goaltender to Connor Hellebuyck, or a suitable 1B to Connor Hellebuck's 1A as we enter into the 2017-18 Jets season. You know, from your perspective, is that should that be a number one offseason priority for the Jets? I mean, having watched Connor Hellebuyck for the past couple of seasons, you know, briefly 2 years ago, you know, much more this past year, how imperative is it from your perspective for the Jets to shore up that goaltending position next to Connor Hellebuyck?
Oh boy, I think it's, you know, again, my opinion, I think it's huge. Is it the number one situation to address? Whether it's 1A or 1B, you know, and maybe trying to look at the back end in regards to the defensive situation. But I think it is. When you look at kind of number one netminders around the league, you look at a number one netminder in a Canadian market, the average age of these guys is pushing 30. And Connor Hellebuyck is a young guy. And I think, in my opinion, they need to allow a little bit more time for him to develop, a little bit more time for him to find his game. I'm not saying that, you know, he doesn't go on a big run of games, a bunch of starts, but when he hits those little bumps in the road, and we saw that a few times this year, how important it is to have that other guy to step in and to play games, to play well, to steal games, just to, you know, have the opportunity to put points in the bank, wins in the bank, when you look at how close things can be at the end of the season and reflect on the season. And even this season, for example, boy, if you you look back and said, geez, if they had just that 1A or that 1B that would have gone in there and maybe, you know, taken home, you know, 8, 12 points, what a huge difference that would be. So, I, in my opinion, it is the largest decision or move that needs to be made. But, you know, maybe I'm a little bit biased with the goalie position, you know, knowing what it takes to some degree to play in a Canadian market, the pressures, the adversities that you face in a season that, again, I think with how young he is, and again, he has a bright future, allow some time for that to grow.
Yeah, Trevor, you mentioned, you know, what it takes to be an NHL goaltender, and you obviously know what it takes. You played almost 400 games in the NHL. It was announced earlier this week that Connor Hellebuyck is going to spend the summer in Western Canada working with Adam Francilia, who has worked with other goaltenders in the NHL like Devin Dubnyk, Eddie Lack, James Reimer, and they're going to work specifically on his posture and setup. Does that just speak to how technical the goaltender position has become, working with specialists on these small parts of the game? Not that, you know, goaltending hasn't been a technical, you know, position for the last 20 or 30 years, but for you, is this important for Connor Hellebuyck to work on these aspects of his game?
You know, you talk about the game and bigger, stronger, faster in regards to the forwards and the position and the equipment and everything else. To me, the biggest change, one of the biggest changes in hockey is the coaching of the goaltending position. And really, in the last 10 years, it has just taken off. I know when I played, you know, generally speaking, a goalie coach was just somebody to work on the space between your ears. Let's go, you know, after a game and talk about, you know, how things went, how you feeling, you know, have a beer. Let's get things on the table here and at the end of the day, you know, do what you can to stop the puck. Let's talk about that afterwards over a drink or over a coffee. Things have completely changed in that regard, and it's become a science to some degree. Obviously, Hellebuck is a guy that is very technical, very efficient, and that's a part of his game that that he really looks to or wants to build upon. With that being said, though, when you look at the Stanley Cup playoffs here, and you look at even the two guys in the finals, and you look at all the series that have happened, the one thing that sticks out to me big time is the athleticism of the goaltenders that are in the Stanley Cup playoffs, the battle, the compete. As when I said, do whatever you can to keep the puck out of the net. I mean, you're seeing guys flopping around, stomping things with the back of their head, the old school stocking pads, just anything they can do to keep the puck out of the net, athleticism again. So that's one thing with Connor Hellebuck is, you know, for me, if I'm watching as we go forward, no question about it, he's an efficient guy, he's a technical guy, huge, bright future. Absolutely, but there's points in time during the season or during games, during moments that I look for in particular, the athleticism in a goaltender.
Trev, one question I had for you is Eric Comrie. I mean, he went to the World Championships with Team Canada this past, about a month ago. What kind of impact would that have on a young player like him going over there? Obviously, he wasn't the number one guy. I think, you know, he's there in the number three role, but still, you know, getting that opportunity to kind of learn from those players and be around that situation. What kind of impact can that have on a young prospect like Eric Comrie?
Well, I think it'd be a positive, what degree of impact? I'm not sure I would look at it as just a huge positive, a huge learning experience. He seems to be a young guy that just wants to be a sponge in regards to soaking up as much information, take in as much coaching, take in as much experience, and just keep growing as a player and as a goaltender. So to me, that's just a part of the package in him being a young guy and gaining a ton of experience and using it as he it goes forward. This is a guy that, when you talk about making comparisons to other goaltenders, he reminds me of Jonathan Quick of the Los Angeles Kings, where he plays. And you mentioned, or I talk about athleticism. He's a guy that plays with a huge amount of athleticism, a huge amount of battle, and I think a guy that eventually at some point down the road is going to have a great opportunity, a great shot at playing in the National Hockey League and probably a long career there.
So, Trevor, is it true that later this afternoon at the Royal Sports annual goalie show and sale that you're going to be shooting some pucks on Rick Ralph?
You supposedly there's a couple experts that are going to be there talking goaltending. I'm not sure if it's Rick and I. I'm waiting to see to get there who else might be there. But, yeah, looking forward to spending the afternoon at Royal and talking shop with young goaltenders that hopefully are coming in to look at some new gear and get fitted. And looking forward to, much like we're talking about here with the Winnipeg Jets, looking forward to the fall and the next season.
Trevor Kidd is a TSN 1290 hockey analyst. You can catch him this afternoon at Royal Sports alongside his assistant, Rick Ralph. Trevor, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for doing this, bud. Have a great offseason. We'll touch base soon.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
Likewise, Trevor. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to do our UFA of the Week segment. We got two for the price of one. They're both Penguins. They're both UFAs, Nick Bonino and Trevor Daly. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Goals from Trevor Daly and Nick Bonino from this year's playoffs. They're both the subject of our UFA of the Week segment.
Bonino.
Welcome back. Thank you for interrupting me. But yes, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com, located conveniently on Waverly, just about the corner of Waverly, and would that be Sterling Lion, I believe. So, you know, check them out in the LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Nick Bonino and Trevor Daly, as I mentioned, the subject of our UFA of the Week segment. Let's start with Bonino. He's a guy who's 33 years old.
Bonino's 29, I believe.
Yeah. Just turned 29. Coming off of a three-year, $5.7 million contract that he had previously signed with the Anaheim Ducks before being traded to the Vancouver Canucks and then traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, Bonino, you know, never, he's only been a 20-goal scorer once in his career. That's a couple of years back with the Ducks when he had 22 goals and 27 assists for 49 points. He's in and around, you can probably expect about 35 to 40 points from Nick Bonino, you know, in
sure.
an average year,
sure.
somewhere in that realm. Centerman plays a key role for the Penguins. You know, how do you see him cashing in when he becomes a UFA? Do you think he gets to unrestricted free agency status, or is this a guy the Penguins put a priority on bringing back into their lineup going forward?
I could see the Penguins re-signing him. I could also see him, you know, becoming a UFA and possibly getting more money, right, Drew? But you mentioned, you're right, I mean, Nick Bonino is, you know, a 15-goal, 35, 40-point guy, even though he did have that 20-goal season a few years back with the Anaheim Ducks. If you go back 4 or 5 years, too, I remember I was talking about Nick Bonino on NHL This Week. I've always been a really big fan of his game, and you mentioned, you know, the point totals and all that, but his biggest asset, Dave, is his versatility, and he's a guy that, sure, he plays center, but he can also play wing, and he's a guy that was getting second power play time, and he's also playing on the penalty kill, right? So he can really play in all situations, and, you know, we saw him block that shot, and looked like he might have broken his ankle there. He certainly, you know, probably has a lot of bruising on that foot there after taking that PK Subban shot, but, I mean, this is a guy that has become a very valuable player for this Pittsburgh Penguins team. And, you know, he has the Stanley Cup ring, obviously, and we don't know if he's going to be able to come back in the Stanley Cup final. But this is a really good player. And, again, I wouldn't be surprised if the Penguins try to lock him up for 3 or 4 years. And if the Penguins don't lock him up, there's going to be a lot of other teams that would love to have a guy like Nick Bonino on their team. So, you know, Bonino is one of those very important depth players. Even mm-hmm. though he might be, you know, a third or fourth liner, you could easily put him, you know, on the second line, and he's not going to be out of place. He does have the ability to put the puck in the net. So, again, I mean, they have an important decision to make, but you'd certainly rather have Nick Bonino in your lineup, especially this time of the season.
You know, and I was going to say, and while we've talked about the pipeline they have from Wilkes-Barre, at the same time, you know, when you have a known quantity in a player like Bonino, do you want to take the risk of moving someone in and possibly disrupting that chemistry? Because center is a different, it's a more difficult position. It's not exactly easy, especially for young players. That's why you generally like to have your centers in your AHL system for a little bit longer to at least ensure that they're getting that proper development. So you're not throwing them into the NHL and, you know, throwing them to the wolves, because regardless of whether they're, you know, the bottom, 3-4 lines, they still are going to be playing against guys who can hurt you. So the fact is, you don't want a player in there without that, with that level of inexperience. So if you have a player like Bonino that you've actually allowed like a team like Anaheim to develop him, mm-hmm. and now you're getting the benefit of that development. I mean, you know, you lock him up for a few more years. That's kind of you've got him for his prime, and really when he's kind of got that window. So I mean, are you going to break the bank on him? No, I don't think so. But well, I think that it's probably a good idea for Pittsburgh if they can.
And he was making, what, $1.9
million? $1.9. 3 years, $5.7 million.
If you can get Nick Bonino for 3 years and $3 million, if you're Jim Rutherford, are you not doing that?
$3 million per season?
For 3 years, yeah.
Is he going to get
$3 million? I think he's a $3 million
a
guy. Absolutely.
You know, only having cracked 20 goals once in his career.
Sure, but it's the versatility in his game. I mean, the guy, you know, will go out there on the first penalty-killing unit. He'll go out there if they need
if he played on a second power play unit.
If
he played on a different team that didn't have the same depth up the middle as the Penguins, do you think he has more offensive productivity in his game?
Yeah, possibly.
So, I think
he can score 20 again. So for me, a guy that could possibly score 20 goals, and then you could play on the PK and the power play, I'd give him $3 million a year. But the question is, does he want more than that? And then maybe he becomes too expensive for the Penguins.
Well, or does he want more term or something like that?
I mean, yeah, sure, he might want 4 years. I don't think he'd be a guy that wants five or six.
I don't think he'd get five or six. No. I don't think he brings, you know, he's certainly useful, but I'm not sure he brings enough to the table that any team would give him more than three, four
right.
tops.
Then again, you look at the contract that David Clarkson signed years ago with Toronto, and, you know, anything can happen. But I think the days of those long contracts are over.
For guys who aren't, you know,
third-line guys.
Yeah, for guys who are third-line guys. Yeah. Flip side to that, a defenseman that the Penguins have as a UFA, that's Trevor Daley. He originally signed a six-year, $19.8 million contract with the Dallas Stars. He went from Dallas to the Chicago Blackhawks very briefly, only spent 29 games in Chicago until he was traded from Chicago to the Penguins, I believe, in exchange for, oh, shoot, who was it going back to Chicago in that trade? I'm going to have to look it up right now. But anyways, this is a guy who was...
Are we talking about Trevor Daley?
Trevor Daley. I forget. I'm going to look it up real quick. I knew it.
I can't remember.
Off the top of my head right now. I forget who it was. It's
Rob Scuderi.
Rob Scuderi. I knew it was a sort of a journeyman defenseman. It was on the... I just couldn't remember who it was.
He won a cup with the Pens in 2009.
Right. So he got traded. So Daley went from Dallas, where he signed the big deal, to Chicago in exchange for, as part of the Patrick Sharp trade.
Yep.
Didn't work out in Chicago, not by a long shot, and has now gone to Pittsburgh, where he certainly found more of a comfort zone there. Not a guy who's going to put up much in terms of the points of offense, but what do you think a guy like Trevor Daley is looking at in terms of a free agency contract? His career high is 38 points. That was with the Stars back in 2014-15, right before he signed the big contract.
Yeah, and yeah, Trevor Daley's, you know, around the 30 to 35 point range, Drew, but I mean, he's an excellent defenseman, moves the puck really well, has always been a tremendous skater, and I thought was always an underrated defenseman on those Dallas Stars teams. But guys, what's really interesting about the Penguins is, with the exception of Chris Letang and Olli Maatta, they don't have any other defensemen signed long-term. Ian Cole's under contract for one more year, and then he becomes a UFA. So they only have three defensemen signed for next season, and we know that Justin Schultz, as an RFA, is going to be re-signed by the Penguins. There's no reason to believe why the Penguins wouldn't re-sign Justin Schultz. So really, after that, you have four defensemen under contract, right? I would be surprised if Ron Hainsey's re-signed, and I'd be surprised if Mark Streit is re-signed. Chad Ruedel, we talked about earlier, he's most likely going to be re-signed. He's a UFA. So really, you know, do you sign Trevor Daley to a 2 or 3 year deal, maybe a 4 year deal? I think you got to keep him.
At what price? I mean, this is a guy who the offensive side of the game, like I said, isn't really there.
What was he making, Drew, this year? Just over three?
He was making $3.3 million. That was his cap hit, was $3.3 million.
I think you maybe give him, you know, 4 years, $4 million a year. I'd have no problem with that.
So he's got a bit of a raise, though, coming to him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, what does he have, 4 or 5 points in the playoffs? He hasn't been lighting it up, but the fact is,
yeah,
he's a
guy.
He's
got 5 points. He's playing just under 20 minutes a game for the Penguins.
He's a guy that really can, if you need him, he can play on your top pair. He can play on your second pair, your third pair. He's another one of those versatile defensemen. He's got a decent shot. You can put him out there on the power play, maybe not the top power play, but certainly he's been getting power play time with the Penguins in the playoffs. So for me, if I'm Jim Rutherford, I want to keep him, knowing that I'm going to lose some of those older defensemen like Streit and Hainsey.
And just a guy who, again, might leave a little bit of money on the table to sign with the Penguins, but he knows a good situation, having been in a bad situation in Chicago where things obviously weren't suited for him. He's found a home in Pittsburgh since that trade.
I think Bonino and Daley are very interesting because I could see one of them maybe leaving via free agency, but I could also see the Penguins signing both of these guys. It's very interesting. I think that one of the reasons why I really think Daley would stay is just because they only have three defensemen under contract next year, and then obviously Justin Schultz would be the fourth because we know that they're going to sign him to probably a 4 or 5 year deal, right?
Well, yeah, certainly found a home in Pittsburgh after not being the savior in Edmonton.
Yep.
Quickly before the break, another update from Nashville in the pregame skate. P.A. Parenteau and Harry Zolnarczyk are in the lineup for the Predators. Looks like Vernon Fiddler and Cody McLeod are out for the Preds. Again, that's not official. Anything can change between now and puck drop, but it looks like those are the two changes for the Predators, with Pickering appearing to be the goaltender for the Preds in tonight's Game 3.
You know, I was just thinking, Drew, Brian Dumoulin is also a pending RFA, and I think he's been kind of underrated. He's not a guy that's going to put up big numbers either, but he's a very solid stay-at-home defenseman. Mm-hmm. So you wonder, you know, if there's enough money to give Dumoulin and Daly contracts. But certainly a guy like Dumoulin, I would also expect to be re-signed.
And the truth is you don't have a tremendous amount of depth in your with Wilkes-Barre. Yep. You've got Derek Pouliot, yep. You know, the 2012 pick. He's most likely a really nice piece that could potentially move up.
It's been 5 years. You'd think that if he was ready, he'd be in there
well,
by now.
Well, you know, you never know. But the fact is that he's seen as a decent prospect for the Penguins within that system. So, but aside from him, they don't have a ton of defensive depth in their prospects. So then
Chris Letang's health has to come into play, right?
So there is an incentive to potentially keep someone that you know, again, a quantity you know, versus some of these unknowns. But anyways, we'll see.
We shall see indeed. When we come back, we shift our focus to the NHL draft. Ezzie sat down with Jerome Berube, virtually sat down, interviewed Jerome Berube, who is the Quebec head scout for hockeyprospect.com. Talk about some of the QMJHL draft prospects, assuming Dave Minuk doesn't have an on-air cough. Yeah,
Dave is struggling a little bit here. He's got a cough. He's got the sniffles.
I'm good. No, the sniffles are done now.
The sniffles have turned into a cough?
Yeah, they've migrated into my throat now.
I'm going to get Dave some cold effects
we'll
or something.
We'll keep Dave alive in the corner there for the next 30 minutes. When we come back, NHL draft talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pleased to be joined by Jerome Berube, Quebec head scout for hockeyprospect.com. Jerome, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Ezra.
Jerome, I want to start off with, obviously, Nico Hischier. He's ranked number one or number two on most scouts' lists. In your opinion, why should Nico Hischier be drafted first overall, and do you think he's ready to step right into the NHL?
I always look at Mitch Marner from Toronto. You know, physically, you look at him, he's like, there's no way this kid could play in the NHL, and he does. So, like, I feel like Hischier's got so good. He's got a big summer ahead of him. You know, get stronger, but I think more and more NHL teams are playing their young player in the NHL more quickly than before. So I think he'll probably be in the NHL next year. Why do I think he should be number one overall pick? I don't know. Us at HockeyProspect.com, we're not even decide yet who's our number one guy. So, but, you know, I really like Nico. He's a very smart player with and without the puck. He's a bit of a dream for a coach to have on his team because you can put him in any situation and he's not going to hurt you. He's, like I said, I think the first word that always going to come for Isher is smart. He's really smart and, you know, he makes players around better and I'm a big fan of him.
Pierre-Olivier Joseph, defenseman for the Charlottetown Islanders, is a projected second-round pick at the upcoming draft. He's also the younger brother of Tampa Bay Lightning draft pick and member of the St. John Sea Dogs, Mathieu Joseph. What are his greatest strengths as a player, and what does he need to work on going forward?
Well, I've seen Pierre-Olivier play since he was 15, covering the midget draft for the Q. So this is a kid that has really... really improved since in the past two, three seasons. His feet have really improved, but, you know, there's still some work to do there. But I like his smart. He moves the puck well. He can play on a power play. He can play on a penalty kill. Good compete level. What I like most about him is, like, every year you see, like, a big improvement in his game. You know, if you asked me 3 years ago, do I think he's going to be an NHL draft pick? I'd probably say no. I always like his older brother, Matthew, a lot. And, Pierre-Olivier, I was struggling a bit with him in his Quebec League draft year. And, you know, I saw him back at 16. I was like, oh, okay. He took a step. And then, you know, this year, he had a great year with Charlottetown and, I'm pretty sure he's going to be in our first round for a ranking or final ranking.
Maxime Comtois, left winger for the Victoriaville Tigre, he's currently ranked 30th in NHL Central Scouting's final rankings amongst North American skaters. Earlier in the year, Comtois was projected to be a potential top 10 pick. What can you tell us about Comtois' game this year, and why do you think he fell so far down the rankings?
Yeah, that was a big storyline this year, you know, in the queue. You know, he had a pretty good tournament in August at the Olympic tournament, and for many reasons, it just didn't work, at least in the first half of the year. He really struggled to put, like, points on the board. I think, skating-wise, you know, we have not seen, like, the improvement that, you know, we thought. His skating was always, you know, average, but I always say, oh, it's going to improve, you know, but it didn't really improve, so that's, you know, a little question mark for me. He started playing better in the second half. He actually moved to center in the second half, and he seems to play better at center than he did on the wings this year. So, you know, maybe he's not as skilled as maybe we thought he was. Maybe, you know, last year or in midget, you know, he was a high pick in the Quebec League draft. So, you know, maybe, you know, as a guy who, you know, I was saying about Joseph, a guy who kept improving, you know, in Contreras' case, like, we didn't really see the improvement from last year to this year. So that's a reason why I think he's dropping in the rankings and, skating needs to get better.
We're joined by Jerome Berube, Quebec head scout for HockeyProspect.com. Next player on the list, Antoine Morin, center for Acadie Bathurst, I should say. He's projected to be a second or third round pick in the upcoming draft. He's a smaller player at 5'9", but he's got tons of skill. He registered 74 points in 67 regular season games. How would you assess Morin's game?
Very smart player. You know, when the Titan draft him, you know, they compare him to, like, a former Winnipeg Jets, Mathieu Perrault. They really thought he could be their next Mathieu Perrault. And, you know, he obviously he's a bit on the small side. And skating is good, but you probably want to be a little bit more faster. For at his size, you probably want him to have, like, another, a bit more faster. But he's a very good with the puck, sees, you know, the ice very well, great playmaker. He can score, but he doesn't have, like, a really strong shot, so he needs to be close in the net to score. So, you know, the thing with him is that, likewise, how much bigger is he going to get? So that's a question mark for him, and that's why maybe he's a bit, you know, lower in the ranking. He's a good talent, no doubt about it.
Ivan Cechovic, left winger for Baie-Comeau. He was the third overall selection in the 2016 CHL import draft. He was a point per game player in his first year in the queue. What is Cechovic's upside at the NHL level, and is there a current NHL player you would compare his game to?
I'm always pretty bad at, you know, with those comparable, but, you know, I think he's got the potential to be possibly a second liner if everything goes well. You know, he showed at the just last U18, and, you know, every time he played international league this year, he did well for Russia. He actually, every tournament he played on the line with Sveshnikov, who's going to be, you know, number one, number two pick next year draft. So he showed that you can play with, like, you know, high caliber line mates. He's a skilled player, but he's a very poised player that, you know, I wish he took charge more in the play. He's a bit of a, sometimes he can be a bit of a ghost in the ice, and then at the end of the game, you check the stats, he's got 2 goals and assists. But you're like, oh, I barely saw him during the game. So, you know, he's the guy that I think, you know, at the Q level, he should be a bit more dominating than, you know, he was this year. Yeah, he's still, like, a point-per-game guy, but I feel like it could be a lot more than it is. So, but the skill is there. I mean, just need to work a bit harder and take charge more in the play.
Antoine Crette-Belzile is a 6-foot defenseman for the Blainville Boisbriand Armada. Multiple injuries limited him to a couple of half seasons the last couple of years. Scouts really like his skating and his hockey IQ. What is your take on Crette-Belzile?
Pretty much it. Actually, past 3 seasons, even in his major draft year, he missed half of the year with back then was a shoulder injury. So I like the he's a good footwork. He skates well, makes a good first pass. There's a lot to like about him. But injuries are starting to get really frustrating for scouts, and I'm sure for him too. So, I mean, I like the player, but like the injuries are really starting to really worry me for at the pro level. Is he going to be durable, and is he going to get hurt every year? Is he going to miss like 10, 20 games every year? So there's a lot of question mark with him, but I like the player. He's a good talent, but those injuries are a concern for me.
Jérôme Derek Baribeau of the Quebec Rampart is the top-ranked QMJHL goaltender for the upcoming draft, but he's actually only ranked 10th amongst North American goaltenders by NHL Central Scouting. Is this just a down year for QMJHL goaltenders, or is there a bigger concern here?
Obviously it's a down year this year. The last couple of years, you had some goalie get picked, Samuel Montembeau, Cameron Boot. I think next year could be a good year for the Q goalie wise. Some good talent like Alexis Gravel in Halifax could be a good one. Baribeau came out of midget. He was just 5th overall pick in the Q draft. He's a huge kid, 6'5", moves really well. Went to Val-d'Or and just things didn't work out at all there. Moved to Quebec in the trade, his play was much better there. New goalie coach. Actually, that goalie coach was his midget goalie coach, which is it was good for him to be united with his old goalie coach. Potential wise, I think he could be a bit of a sleeper, but he's got a lot of work to do. Focus-wise during the games, sometimes it's not always there. But he's got the size NHL teams one goal. 6'5", you look at NHL playoffs, Dahl 6'3" and up. So, you got some potential, but, he's a bit of a risky pick, I think.
We're joined by Jérôme Berube on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Jérôme is the Quebec head scout for Hockey Prospect. We've got a couple questions left for you here, Jérôme. Joel Teasdale, left winger for Blainville Boisbriand. He had 47 points in 60 games during the regular season, and then he added 15 more points in 18 playoff games. How much did his performance in the QMJHL playoffs help his draft stock?
It's tough to say for other teams. I've watched Teasdale, the past 2 seasons, the Armada are their closest team for me, so I see them most of the time. He's a hardworking kid, very unselfish on the ice. He's got some work to do with his skating, and he's very mature physically. He plays that fun on the net role and in the power play, and he's gonna take punishment there. And, like I said, he's very unselfish on the ice, and if I'm a Q team, I have him on my team any day of the week. He's a good talent. As far as NHL wise potential, he's probably more of a bottom six, type guy. I don't know if he's got the potential offensively to be a top six guy, and skating gonna need to improve. And he's not a huge kid also, so, I like the player, but he kind of he did drop a bit in the rankings this year. His skating is a bit, you know, he scares us a bit.
We just saw Joe Valeno of the St. John Sea Dogs in the Memorial Cup. He's a top-rated prospect for the 2018 NHL draft. He was granted exceptional status a couple of years ago as a 15-year-old, and he's already played 2 years in the QMJHL. How did you see his game grow this year, and do you believe he can be a top-three pick for next year's draft?
You know, it's first of all, he had like trouble, had some injury trouble in the first half of the year, so he missed quite a few games in the first half. He came back, you know. St. John has really done a good job protecting him in their lineup, like he was an after first line center. And he was mostly this year and last year mostly either like second and third line, and you know, giving second power play ice time. The thing with Valeno is that, you know, I wish I saw a bit more of a progression in his game from last year. He's a good talent, good shot, he's a good skater, but he's very agile. Like, he can make people miss and on the open ice, and I like his game. As far as like 2018 draft, it's tough to say because I don't know all of the other players around, like in the Western Hockey League or in the U.S. or Europe. So it's been tough to, you know, where I would rank him. But, I don't think he's going to be too far off from, like, a top 10. So, it's tough to say because, you know, first of all, we didn't do any 2018 ranking yet, so I don't know where we have him. And I don't know all the players, so it's a bit hard to place him somewhere. But he's a good talent, and, you know, good news for him in St. John next year. They'll lose a lot of players, so he'll get, like, all the ice time he needs to really develop and, you know, perform next year.
Jerome Berube is the Quebec head scout for HockeyProspect.com. Jerome, thanks very much for joining us today on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline to go over some QMJHL prospects that are eligible for the 2017 NHL Draft, and enjoy the QMJHL Draft tomorrow.
Hey, thanks, Ezra, and thanks for having me on again.
All right, thank you. Take care.
The Legal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Jerome Berube, Quebec head scout for HockeyProspect.com, for joining us. Talk about QMJHL draft eligible prospects. In case you missed any of that interview, it's available for download on iTunes. It's available on Google Play. Subscribe to the show via your iPod or your Samsung.
It will be available.
Will be available, yeah. Sorry, post the future tense. It'll be available about sometime this afternoon, right?
Can you play our show on your Discman?
If you have a Discman, you can try.
Yeah,
I don't
you
think you'll be
successful. In theory, you could. You could download it to a DVD or a CD.
Yeah, you could burn it to a CD, put it in your Discman, and listen to it that way. If you went, you know, back to 1993 or something, that would
it's funny you
work.
Mentioned 1993, because I still have a CD player in my car, and I've been listening to what I think is the best hip-hop album of all time, Ready to Die by Notorious B.I.G., which I believe came out in 1993.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you.
Around there, 1993, 94.
I'm going to nod and smile and say that this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, he's been absolutely killing it. Troy Walker, two shows, get out of the heat and into the comedy club, 7:15 and 10 p.m. tonight to see Troy Walker. And just announced coming up in August, you know him from Letterkenny on Crave TV, K. Trevor Wilson, going to be back at Rumors at the end of August. Also, Piff the Magic Dragon, you know him from America's Got Talent, another comedian coming in August. So some great shows coming to Rumors in August. Check him out, RumorsComedyClub.com. Always some great material up on stage at Rumors.
What about Piff Daddy, Drew? Is he coming?
Is he? No, Piff Daddy doesn't exist as far as I know.
Well, I see. I tied it into we were talking about Notorious B.I.G. By the way, Ready to Die came out in 1994, but needless to say, greatest hip hop album ever.
I'm not going to argue with you again on that one. I salute you and say all the power to you. Want to give a couple shout outs before we wrap up the show here on this Saturday morning. First, great charity event taking place tomorrow. The Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life raises money for the Riverview Health Center Foundation. I'm going to be participating in that bike ride. That goes tomorrow morning. You can still join if you want. Join, raise some money. In-person registration begins, I believe, at 8 a.m. tomorrow at the Riverview Health Center. For more information, just Google Riverview Health Center Foundation. You can get all the information up there on your computer. It's a great event. I've been doing it for, I think, the last 5, 6, 7 years now. I can't recall exactly, but it's a great event.
It's the one time of year you exercise.
It's true. It's the one time of year I do exercise. It's a great event, raising money for a very good cause. And, of course, want to give a shout-out to Remus and to Leah. They're getting married tomorrow.
Yep.
Extended live coverage of Remus's wedding.
Do we have some wedding music, Rory, that we can play here?
We'll see if Rory can pull that up. Extensive live coverage on Snapchat and Instagram.
Yep.
All evening tomorrow as they get married, and it's going to be a great event. So shout out to Remus and Leah. The big day finally upon us there tomorrow.
Yep, absolutely. We got to give Remus and Leah shout out. And, you know, all I can say to Michael is don't screw this up.
The fact he hasn't been able to screw it up yet, I think it gives me good thinking, good vibes for tomorrow. I think if Leah was going to bail, she would have bailed a long time ago.
There we go.
But, yeah, beautiful music there, Rory. Thank you. That's lovely. So they're getting married tomorrow, so that'll be a great event to attend. Really looking forward to that. It's been a great show on this Saturday morning here, gentlemen. Thanks to everybody who joined us on this program. Interviews with Jerome Berube, interviews with Trevor Kidd, Aaron Portsline, and Bill West. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download or will be available for download on iTunes, on Google Play. Subscribe, get it sent to your Apple or your Samsung device and your Android device each and every Saturday. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support these fine local businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. For producer Rory doing a great job behind the board, for Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball here on TSN 1290.